the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. We're on the last chapter of the original, we're in the postword to the original book, How to Grow Lotus Blossom. And on page 170, our master goes on to say, to live beyond duality may seem cold to the dualistic mind. I can assure such a mind that to live beyond the opposites is anything but cold. This is why I started the talk yesterday, and it's a strange statement that, you know, if you start thinking this sounds like sour grapes, don't think that. It's not what it is. But this is the thing, is that the teaching that the Zen master will give will sound cold. You know, a monk comes and a monk goes, Reverend Master used to say. You know, it's not my problem. So, you know, what does the head do sometimes? Well, does that mean she doesn't care? Well, you only had to be around Reverend Master to see. You know, you just feel her. She radiated compassion. She radiated love. I'd be walking the cloisters sometimes, and, you know, you pass Reverend Master, who was doing her daily round of the cloister, and I'm not. She'd make your day with a smile. You know, you just feel bathed in her love sometimes. So it's about something else than that. It's about accepting the way things are. It's about accepting the way things are and not trying to impose our personal will on the universe and call that love. It may come out of love, but it comes out of a saddened love. We're talking here about real spiritual love. You know, it sounds cold when Master Mokugen says, back in 98-99, I'd never heard anyone say this before, but she said, to love is to let go. And that can sound cold, but that's, you know, she also, especially at that time, was just radiating love. It had nothing to do with not loving. It's that mature spiritual love doesn't try to possess or to control or to own. It lets go. You know, there's no expression of love that's a more genuine expression of love than to entrust those who you love into the hands of the eternal, into the hands of infinite love. She says, to bathe in the Lord's fountain is to be washed thoroughly and intimately with pure love. To live beyond the opposites is to know that no matter what a being has done in the past, he is and always was immaculate. Living beyond the opposites eliminates the problem of labels that the world puts on others. It is knowing that he whom the world labels a criminal is immaculate in the sight of the Lord. It is knowing that she whom the world dubs a prostitute has equal rights with the head of state before the Lord. They are not the Lord, and the Lord is all of them. For centuries we have usurped the Lord's prerogative, setting up our petty opinions, making our judgments of one another, of ourselves and one another, based on these opinions. She says, still the Lord waits in all-embracing silence. Who can fathom such love? I bathe in the Lord's fountain, and I cannot even conceive of the depth of that love. I can only tell others of it and hope and pray that they may know it too before they die. This is why, you know, throughout her life as a monk, you know, she continued to make her offering of the Dharma, in the face again and again of people turning away and off, sometimes slandering her. You know, she never closed her heart and she never stopped making the offering. Why? She said, I can only tell others of it and hope and pray that they may know it too before they die, that love. It's worth paying the price. You know, if in the course of one's life as a monk, one other person, in all that time, if one other person can, in part, because of one's being a monk, come to know that love of the eternal, that's reason enough to offer the Dharma. She says, in the darkest place, the Lord gave me all of the teaching, and in the lightest place, His teaching remains the same. During my Kensho in 1963, He gave me the same teaching, and He will give it to me again at the hour of death. That teaching is nothing matters. It's small, that's all in capitals here. Nothing matters. What a magnificent peace-bringing teaching this is. You know, what is the flip side of nothing matters? The flip side of nothing matters is hold fast to the Lord of the house. That's the flip side of it. It's the same thing. You need the nothing matters when you're clinging and you need to let go. The nothing matters is a reminder. Let go into pure faith and pure trust. Don't try to hold on to external things. They're not real. They're not a true refuge. So, when you come to that point, let go, look up, and there it is. The Lord of the house. Hold fast to the Lord of the house. It's the same thing. It's the same teaching. She says, last summer I wrote the essence of the teaching I had received during those early months into a mantra. I write it again here for any who may find it useful. I believe this is the first thing that she sent up from her retreat. See, even right in the darkest place, we were getting the teaching. The name of this is, I am glad that I became a monk, with the glad emphasized in italics. The treasure house exists. When the Lord of the house permits me to hold the jewel, I must do it with awe. I must do so with awe and reverence. I must hold it so that each facet is distinct. I should not show this jewel idly to those still caught in fame and gain, who may consider or weigh its worth, but I show it anyway. She shows the jewel of the teaching, knowing that some will turn away, and also in the hope, in the faith, that at least one person will benefit, as of course, in fact, many have. The teaching goes on, nothing matters, mindfulness is all. The scriptures must be taken literally, for they were obtained at death's door. Never come too close nor put yourself too far away from anything. If life comes, there is only life. If death comes, there is only death. I step off into death when my purpose for living ceases. I step off into life when my purpose for living emerges. My purpose for living is to be a monk, so now is not the time to die. It is sufficient for me just to be a monk. Although being careful of others' training, I cannot do it for them. They and I make and carry our own karma. They must find their own purpose for living. To be a live monk, I must know the harmony of body and mind. The body will not know peace until the mind ceases from evil. The Lord of the house says, if you wish, when I make my choices, The consequences are not his problem. If I am to be a monk, I must unceasingly heed the Lord of the house. When the Lord of the house gives you his teaching, listen attentively and respectfully, and quickly, loudly, reverently, and obediently say yes. In my years as a monk, I've often come back to this. Sometimes in my mind, sometimes looking it up in the book. I've often come back to this. She describes it as a mantra, you know, a teaching that is can be gone over again and again, and used as a ground, something to ground you in time of need. And I know nothing better than this. Reb Master used to say, and I think she was quoting something from scripture, I'm sure, but I never knew where it was from. She said, when the Buddha taught, the unbelievers were allowed to depart. And, you know, there's no judgment in this. She said, this is the way it was. When the Buddha taught, when the Buddha gave teaching, the unbelievers were allowed to depart. You could also say, when the Buddha taught, the believers were allowed to stay there and take it in. Now, that's the part you never hear about. The offering was made, and we have our choice whether we will accept the offering and make use of it or not. The Buddha couldn't let it matter to him, or he wouldn't be able to give the teaching when it was at the time and in the way that was needed to give it. Otherwise, you know, he would always be feeling he had to pull his punches to keep from driving someone away. And you can't teach on that basis. You simply can't teach on that basis. You have to be willing to lose your congregation members, your friends, your disciples. You have to be willing to lose everything if that's what is truly good to have happen. In actual fact, it doesn't usually play out that way. One loses throughout one's life people who one loves from time to time, through death, from separation, through misunderstandings. You know, there's many ways in which we experience loss. One cannot give true teaching on the basis of such considerations. Considerations of loss and gain of any kind. One has to give true teaching when it is good to do so, to whom it is good to do so, and the place that is good to do so. And that question of what is it that is good is ultimately, it's not up to me. It wasn't up to River Master. River Master couldn't, once this Kensho got going, River Master couldn't help what happened to her. She couldn't help the things that were happening. If she kept going in the training, this was going to happen. This came scrolling out of her body and mind. She couldn't help it. Once that process gets going, if you willfully try to block it, you'll just die. I'll just tell you that, my own experience. If you were to willfully try to block it, you would just die. It is so powerful what's happening there. Fortunately, for a person undergoing that process, it's the last thing in your mind to stop it. You know, you're swept up in it. You've dissolved into it. The brain is turned off. The heart speaks. You listen, you follow. through heaven and through hell, it doesn't matter. This passing scenery doesn't matter. What matters is to be doing the following, to be doing the listening, to be doing the asking. This is what matters. There was never any question of Reverend Master ceasing to love any of her disciples, whether they stayed with her or not. There was never a question. There was never, certainly never a question in my mind. In my most difficult period of training, I never doubted Reverend Master loved me any more than I could doubt that the Eternal loved me. I don't know if that's everyone's experience. Maybe it isn't, but I feel I'm very fortunate in that. It's the sometimes rather unhappy job of the Zen Master to tell people the home truths that they'd rather not hear. Would life really be any better for any of us if that didn't happen? You know, if we consider the nature of samsara, you know, the suffering that permeates samsara, that, you know, we're all mortal. We all become ill. You know, every person who we love, everything that we love, is transitory and will pass away. Now, these truths are they're undeniable. So, what is the real question here? The real question is, given the fact that these truths are what they are, what's going to be my approach towards them? What's going to be my attitude towards them? How am I going to deal with them? Buddhist teaching shows us how to deal with them. If we wish to deal with them in the way that the Buddhas and ancestors do. If we don't wish to, that's fine. But if we wish to deal with them as the Buddhas and ancestors do, then, in my mind, there's no greater teaching than the teaching on how to grow a lotus blossom right from the very beginning. She said, my books are roadmaps, and there's no better roadmap than this. Someone facing illness, facing the very real possibility of imminent death, and saying, I don't know how long I've got, I'm going to do the finest job I can of living the rest of my life, however long or short it may be that I know how. And then once she's really said yes to the Eternal, then the Eternal took her down this amazing road. There were choices all along the way. But what is the basic choice all along the way, you know? It really always comes down to looking up rather than down. Stopping and asking, what is it truly good to do? Rather than just acting impulsively. Being willing for whatever is good, rather than hanging on to any opinion, any particular state of affairs. All along the way, that's the choices. You see it in the beginning of the book, you see it right at the end. You see it all along the way. There's a lot of scenery that you go through in the course of this book. The scenery I find really helpful. But I find it helpful because of the teaching that is contained within it, the way it conveys teaching. It's said that a picture is worth 1,000 words, and some of these pictures convey what no words can convey. And what is being conveyed is the teaching. There's so much in the modern world, there's so much skepticism about whether there really is such a thing as religious truth, spiritual truth. I feel fortunate. It's something I've always known in my innermost heart. I've always known that there had to be, that there is genuine truth, that there is a truth, there is such a thing as true belief and true conviction, as I was saying yesterday. That there is truth that we can experience and that we can know from our own experience, and that we can believe in and hold fast to through all the changing circumstances of life. And then beyond any belief, there is that that is real, that is a true refuge that we can hold fast to. And we can do it by an act as simple as just sitting down and looking at a wall. It's an amazing thing, really. In coming weeks or months, I don't know exactly when, I'll do some more talks on certain teachings that I think are particularly relevant to how to grow lotus blossom. As I mentioned before, I'm drawn back to the five ranks, teaching of the five ranks, which is really the same as the teaching of the five columns. And that is always has always been regarded as the distinctive expression of teaching, distinctive to Soto Zen in Buddhism. A teaching formulated originally by Tozan and his disciple Sozan. And yet, the wonderful thing is it's always the same thing again. Same thing and expressed in a new way, experienced in a new way, but it's always the same thing again. And there may be some other associated teachings that come up. In addition, in later years, Reverend Master had more visions, some of which are included in what's called Book 2 of the second edition of How to Grow Lotus Blossom. And I'm not as familiar with this part of the book as I am with the original teaching from 1976 and 1977. And there are particular things in here that I've found really helpful too. So at some point I'll be doing some talks undoubtedly on at least some of these later visions. And for now, I'm pooped out, and probably everyone listening is pooped out too, so we'll call it a day. Thank you, friends. Shuddha Buddha, Shuddha Dharma, Shuddha Sangha.